Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
It's outside. Or? Text 51. We're talking specifically about Lord Rishabhdev and his transcendental body. Evam cha avesh avatarataya pratitasya shri Rishabhada devasya pi vigraha evam yojyate yata idam sharira mama dur bivavyam tatvam hi me hridayam yatra dharmaha krishte krito me yad adharma adad ato hi mam rishabham prahur arya. And thus, even the body of Sri Rishabhdev, who is recognized as an empowered incarnation, is conceived of similarly as follows. This body of mine is the inconceivable truth in which my heart is religion, and on the back of which I have kept irreligion far away. Therefore, those who are on the progressive path of spiritual life call me Rishabhdev. So, empowered incarnation of Lord Vishnu, Rishabhdev claims that his own body is the inconceivable truth. The words are, durvibhavyam, dharma. And dharma resides within his heart. Raju! So, I don't care. Roger should shout. Okay, continuing. Jiva Goswami's notes on this. Idam manushyakara shariram hi nishitam durvibhavyam durvitarkyam yat tatvam tadeva. This body, in a human form, is for certain that truth which is inconceivable, which is not subject to logical analysis. Okay, that's inconceivable means durvitarkya. What's tarka? No, that's the naive idea of tarka. What's the technical meaning? No. That's another meaning. That is a meaning. More specifically, more technically. Well, it has to do with guessing, but it's a special form of logic of trying to pick a hypothesis by guessing. You know, the first step in a traditional logical presentation is your thesis. What are you trying to prove? So what you have to pick is something that's provable. You have to try various hypotheses by guessing. Maybe this is the thing we want to argue. Maybe it's that. And maybe such and such is a good reason for it. And you try out the different possibilities of things you want to prove and how you can prove them. That's called tarka. Sorting out the possibilities for a logical argument. Tarko apatishta. A tarka can't settle all questions. There's definite limits to logic. But that's what tarka means. So you can't, by guesswork, by sorting out different philosophical hypotheses understand the body of God. Okay, and then continuing, yatraiva dharmo bhagavata lakshanas tatraiva me hridayam manaha. In that same place, yatra, where religion characterized as God consciousness is found, my heart, or you could say my mind, is also located. The Vrishabhdev uses the word hridayam. Jiva Goswami says you can interpret that as manas. Wherever there is Krishna consciousness, then you find the mind of Krishna is there. Yad yasmat tad viparitadi lakshano adharmo maya prishte kritaha tatak paran muko aham ityartaha. And since irreligion, characterized as the opposite of that, is kept by me on my backside, it should be understood that I am disinterested in it, disinterested in irreligion. Or maybe disinterested is not the right word. Paramukha means he's definitely against it. Okay. So, God's body embodies the principles of religion. Irreligion's on his backside. So his body is the personification of religion. Well, he's the personification of the religion, so his body is him. Let me read the commentary. Lord Rishabhdev presented himself as a human king, although one with unique power of renunciation. He didn't like to begin. Oh, that's Rishabhdev. Anyway, he presented himself as a king, not as necessarily as God. He did not perform miraculous feats like killing demons, whom even the demigods could not defeat. Therefore, some may judge that he must not be a direct expansion of Vishnu Tattva, but a finite jiva, what is technically called an avatara of the Shakti Avesh, or you can call it Avesh category. Srila Rupa Goswami defines this kind of incarnation in his Lagu Bhagavatamrita, first chapter, verse 18. Gyana Shaktiadi Kalaya Yatra Vishto Janardanaha Ta Avesha Nigadyante Jiva Eva Mahatama. Very great jivas, in whom Lord Janardan imparts portions of his knowledge, strength, and other energies, are called aveshyas. Rishabhdev embodies the Supreme Lord's power of vairagya, or detachment. That's the particular energy of the Lord, which is strongly invested in Rishabhdev. Well, okay, so is Rishabhdev a jiva, who's an avesh avatar? Well, but in the same text of the Lagu Bhagavatamrita, in the fourth chapter, Srila Rupa identifies Lord Rishabhdev as otherwise than as a Vaishavatar. Jiva Goswami there said, Rupa Goswami says, Hare Krishna. Avataras chaturdasyur avesha prabhava api ataiva vaibhavavasta Paravastas chatatrate. There are four kinds of incarnations in general. Avesha, Prabhava, Vaibhava Avasta, and Para Avasta. Hari Swaruparupaye Paravastibhya unakaha shaktinam taratam yena pramati tat tat atyakaha. Those forms of Lord Hari himself who exhibit less potency than the Paravasta forms are called Prabhava and Vaibhava, respectively according to their relative degree of manifest potency. So the Prabhava have more potency, right? And the Vaibhava have less. And the forms that are most fully manifesting the Lord's opulence are called Paravasta, and there are only four of those. So Lord Balaram, I think, is in the Prabhava category. Anyway, Prabhavascha dvida tatra drishyante shastra chakshusha eke nati chira vyakta nati vistrita kirtaya te mohani chaham sascha shukladyascha yuganagaha. Is chira supposed to be long e or short? Meaning long time. Short. Okay. By scriptural vision, moreover, the Prabhava incarnations are divided into two categories. One kind does not appear for a long time and are not very famous. They don't appear for a long duration and they're not very famous. That's one kind of Prabhava incarnation. These include Mohini, Hamsa, and the incarnation of Shukla, who appear in every yuga. Apare shastra kartara prayaksyur muni cheshtitaha danvantar rishabhau vyaso tatascha kapilascha te. The other kind are mostly compilers of scripture, acting the role of sages. These are Danvantari, Ripshaba, Vyasa, Dattatreya, and Kapila. So these are Prabhava incarnations, not Avesha avatars. So they're not Jivas. They're Vishnu Tattva. Srila Rupa Goswami is thus of the opinion that Rishabha Deva is directly the Supreme Lord, and none of the standard commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam deny this. Now, I don't think Prabhupada said something definite about this, about Vyasadeva. I don't think in the purports he says that Vyasadeva is a jiva. But he did. Where? Well, okay, but I don't think Prabhupada. Prabhupada had a discussion or we had a discussion? He said he was Jew. Where? In a discussion? Okay, well, let's. I don't see it in the purports. Maybe he told somebody in person. Somehow in the BBT we decided, okay, let's make him a Jiva. And Vyasadeva, he is always spelled lowercase h. But I don't know if Prabhupada gave a definite opinion about that. Anyway, here Rupa Goswami is categorizing him as Vishnu Tattva. Okay, you can look for it. Srila Rupa Goswami is thus of the opinion, okay, that Rishabhadeva is directly the Supreme Lord, and none of the standard commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam deny this. Okay, I guess I checked the commentaries. Nobody says that he's not Vishnu Tattva in the commentaries. Representing the Sri Sampradaya, Acharya Viragava writes, Asau Harik Kapiladi Vat Swamshena Rishabhakyo Raja. This king known as Rishabha is Lord Hari himself. In a direct expansion, Swamsha, similar to Lord Kapila and others. Addressing his assembled 100 sons, Lord Rishabha told them that his body is the source of religion and irreligion. God alone is the source of all true religion. Dharmam tu saksha bhagavat pranitam. Real religious principles are enacted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, this avatar's name is Rishabha, which means bull, or as applied to human beings, the most excellent of men. Rishabha Deva is the most excellent king, teacher, and renunciant. And he is the Supreme Lord, the one person who excels all others in everything. He taught the highest principles of religion, namely loving devotional service to the Lord in his original form and his avatars. In contrast to which, any activity not intended for the Supreme Lord's pleasure is irreligion. Anything in which the Supreme Lord shows no interest should be of no interest to his servants. Okay, do we have any questions on that paragraph? No?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, what is it? Okay.
The first one is, it says here that even the bodies, this is what you're going to tell us, is that even the bodies of all Vaishya avatars.
What about them?
Even the bodies of because that's the argument about that. As I understand, is that he's describing the body of the Lord is transcendental for all these reasons.
Yes.
And now this, in the language of Shaivism, Shaivism says, and even the body of the Vaishya avatars are transcendental.
Well, it says here, Avesh Avatara Teya Pratitasya. He's perceived as being an Avesh Avatar. So maybe it's a little. Maybe everyone thinks he's Avesh Ajiva, but he's not. It might be that. Or else I'm contradicting Jiva Goswami, which I shouldn't do. I'm pointing out that Jiva Goswami said one thing and Rupa Goswami said another. Maybe I shouldn't be doing that. But it may just be that the point is that people think he's a jiva. But according to Rupa Goswami, he actually isn't.
But why would he bring this subject in? Is it to prove that those who...
Well, even a minor, you know... because he's in his Bhava category, a lesser avatar, less important avatar.
Okay.
Even less important avatars, even the ones that people think are jivas, even if they're not, they have transcendental bodies. Jivas generally don't have spiritual bodies in the material world. Generally.
So why is that some incarnations like Rishabha or Vyas, they are...
They're what?
They're known as...
Yeah.
According to
Sanskrit, Avesha, Vata,
Vayat. Patita. Patita means what?
Perceived.
Known, perceived. Why so some people, of these incarnations are perceived or just confusion?
Because he looks like an Avesha. He looks like a Jiva. He's acting like a Jiva. That's what I discussed in the commentary. That he's acting like an ordinary person.
There's nothing really that distinguishes him from...
You mean...
Yeah, doesn't kill demons or...
He doesn't... He's not acting like God. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Jiva Goswami is not really dealing with the question whether he really is God or not. He's just talking, saying that he doesn't act like God.
Is it that the living entity could do the same thing?
That what could? A jiva could do the same thing?
A Vesha Avatar, a Shakti Vesha Avatar, could do the same thing as these incarnations, like for example, Vyasa Dev, Vishabha, or even Kapila, they might look as Vaishnava because Jiva
could accomplish
the same thing if he's
empowered
by the Lord.
Oh,
is that
boy.
Why?
Yes, right. The Vaishnava didn't do anything, didn't seem to do anything that an empowered Jiva couldn't do. So therefore he's being perceived as an empowered incarnation because he didn't show himself to be anything more than that.
It's like a one sense, it's a Prabhupada incarnation that looked like exactly like a Shaktivesh, or it's a,
yes,
a Buddha's Shaktivesh and activism.
You like that, yes. Okay. Any other questions? Go ahead.
Can you explain more in the same place where religion characterizes God consciousness is found? My heart, mind is located. In other words, that he's interested in that.
Well, because what is dharma? Dharma is Krishna consciousness. So where are you going to find Krishna consciousness? In the heart of Shabdev. Yeah, where does Krishna consciousness originate from? It originates from Krishna. Where do we learn our Krishna consciousness from? Krishna teaches it to us. Bhagavad Gita, elsewhere. Krishna is the original teacher of devotional service. And that's where devotional service resides. Of course, it resides in his devotees at the same time, but wherever there is Krishna consciousness, there is my heart. Okay, suppose you say, well, Krishna consciousness is in the devotee. But that's where you'll find Krishna, right by his devotee, next to him. Wherever the devotee is, that's where you'll find Krishna at his heart. In the heart of devotees. Okay. But anyway, wherever the devotee's heart is, Krishna's heart's right close by. Yes?
I have another question. Thank you.
Yes?
To understand more, this is a talk about, like, for example, modern philosophy, the Japanese example of, okay, if there is a tree and makes some noise and nobody's there to hear it, does that actually make some noise? Is that some type of talk?
Well, that's what the sub Buddhists talk like that. We say, because they don't understand there's an absolute person who perceives everything. There is somebody to hear it. God is there. He's everywhere. And even in the forest where there's nobody else, God can hear it. So that's only interesting argument for atheists. But for those who just understand the existence of God, then you're... whatever, there's noise in the forest where there's nobody to hear it. There is somebody to hear it. That's Krishna.
So Tarka is just like intellectual juggling where people invent a hypothesis and then tries to prove that hypothesis.
No, you're thinking of something else. Tarka is a bona fide part of the process of logical argument. It's deciding what you're going to argue. What argument, before you go about your argument, you should plan. Okay, what argument? It's like you're going to have a, you know, play in a soccer game. So you decide before the game. The team decides, the coach decides what kind of game they're going to play. What moves they're going to try. So like that, the logicians, before the game, they decide what moves they're going to make. They decide, okay, we're going to try to prove this, and we're going to try to prove it this way, with these reasons. You use Tarka to sort out what you're going to prove. It's not necessarily bogus. It's not bogus, but it's incomplete. It doesn't prove anything. It's just deciding what you're going to try to prove.
In the Dhamma Sandarbha, there was one describing Anuman.
Tarka is part,
yeah,
of Anuman.
So there was four sections of that, yeah. Including, yeah, the hypothesis, proving a point.
Well, see, Tarka properly begins with stating your hypothesis. But there's some preliminary work. Before you actually get to work, you have to decide, what are you going to try to prove? It's before you actually start the public discussion. You're in private, in the back rooms, you decide what you're going to talk about. What are we going to try to prove? That's Tarka. You know, you decide, well, I'm not going to try to prove that because I probably can't do it. Like a lawyer, you know. Client comes to him and he decides whether he wants to take the risk of defending the client. If he thinks, well, I can't win his case. He's absolutely guilty and he's got a bad case and it looks bad. I don't want to take his case. So like that, it's like a lawyer deciding to take a case or not. That's Tarka. Okay, we move on to 51.2. Ata eva vaktur asya shri rishabha devasya cha sarva antima lilapi vyajin antardhanam eva prakriti loka pratitya anusare naiva tutata varnita atmaramata riti darshanartam. So again, we're discussing further how Rishabhadev seems to be a finite person, but actually it's just a pretense. Therefore also, the very last pastime of this speaker, Sri Rishabhadev, his simulated disappearance, is described in that way from the viewpoint of materialistic people, for the sake of showing how self-satisfied sages behave. Okay. He set the example how an Atmarama should behave, although he's actually Supreme Lord. Taduktam yogi nam samparaya vidim anushikshayan iti. This is stated in the words, teaching the way in which yogis leave this world. Atam svakalevaram jihasu ityatra kalevara shabdasya prapancha prapanche eva artaha upasana shastre tasya tata prasidhe. And so in the statement in the Bhagavatam, when he desired to give up his body, the word body means the visible created world. He didn't literally give up his body because his body is spiritual if he's Vishnu. But body here can mean the visible material world. Since there is precedent for this usage of the word body, kalevara, in the scriptures that teach meditational worship. We were talking about upasanas before. Upasanas are meditational devotions, devotional meditations. Or not maybe devotional, the meditations on the Supreme, usually in his impersonal feature, taught in the Upanishads. But there are also other shastras that teach more about these meditations. Special scriptures written by various sages about how to meditate. Those are called Upasana shastras. Also, Upasana shastra in a broader sense can mean the scriptures that teach deity worship and mantra meditation, like the Pancharatras. That can also be called Upasana. So, and the point is, in the Upasana Shastra, Kalevara, or synonym of it, is sometimes used to mean the material world, not just a particular physical body. And here's the example. Tata, Atta, Samira Vega Viduta Venu Sangarshana Jatogra Davanalas, Tadvanam Alelihana Sahatena Dadaha. Okay. Ityasya Vastavarte 2. This is not an example of something from an Upasana Shastra. This is the Bhagavatam again, describing the final pastime of Lord Rishabhadev. Sahatena Dadaha Ityasya Vastavarte 2. Tena Sahaya Iti. Kartri Sahaye Tritiya. And so, okay. And when it is said, in the fifth canto, then a wild forest fire began, caused by the friction of bamboos, which were being blown by the wind. In that fire, the entire forest, and along with it, the body of Lord Rishabhadev, were burnt into ashes. The entire forest, and along with it, the body of Lord Rishabhadev, were burnt to ashes. This is properly construed by letting the phrase along with it use the instrumental case in the sense of assistance to the acting subject. Is that a bona fide use of the tritia? Assistance to the subject? Kartri Sahaya? Do we have a sutra for that? I'm sorry. Okay. The most prominent assistance under subjugation to the Kartri. The Kartri is the main doer, so under the control of the Kartri, that which gives the most help, assistance.
That's the definition of Karana.
That's the definition of Karana. That's the basic Tritiya idea.
Well, but that's another meaning.
That's
Saha
accompanying.
So
it's his basic Karana. Okay.
Which is expressed somehow by the word Saha.
Well, Kasada is expressing Tritiya. Usually it means something special Tritiya, but here it's meaning ordinary basic Tritiya, or basic Karana. Usually, tritiya upapada, but the idea is accompanying somebody. Gona mukya nyayena kartari eva platimaka pravitti. By the logic of the relativity of primary and secondary, the reference is primarily to the subject only. Maybe that sentence is confusing. First of all, I don't think we have a subject or a subject and a verb in that sentence. Let me check it. Anyway, the idea is we got to have a relationship of subject and agent or instrument, subject and instrument. In that relationship, the subject is primary. As is said in the sutra, Kartradina.
Sahaya assistance.
Yes, Sahaya can be assistance, yeah. Sahaya. Sahaya comes from the word saha. Yeah. Anyway, problem is that this is not a separate sentence. This last sentence is just a tag. It's just Panchami. There's no subject there. So I have to change the translation because this last sentence is not a complete sentence. Let me mark it as such. Hold on a second. Insert a comment. Not reference, but review. New comment. Okay. Okay, I'll fix the translation, but that's more or less the idea. That in this phrase with the saha, the subject is primary, and he burned himself up along with the forest. The forest is secondary. He's the subject. Let's see what the commentary says. The Supreme Lord never suffers the pains of birth and death. He appears in this world and again disappears when and how he pleases, whether extraordinarily or ordinarily. When Lord Rishabhdev became an ideal, renunciant wandering in the secluded forest in the hills of western Karnataka, he chose to leave his body dramatically by being burned alive in a forest fire, or so it seems to the eyes of the mundane public. In reality, however, God never relinquishes his body, which is eternal. He only gives up his apparent connection with Prapancha, the world of matter. Do you know where this actually was, where Rishabhdev left his body? It's sort of middle Karnataka. Maybe it's South Karnataka district, but it's called not Sahadri, but Kutakachala is called in the Bhavatam. Do you know exactly where it is?
One of the Sahyadri mountains,
Like, do you know where it is? We have a farm. We have a farm. Well, it's about 80, about 90 kilometers. We have a farm there. Amma Tuffa's farm is right there in those hills. In his backyard is where it happened. Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami, Tuffa Darsh, Prabhupada disciple. I'm sorry. Not Amma Tuffa. Another Dori. Yeah, but Prabhupada disciple. Yes.
His
form.
Yeah.
That's Sarada. Sarvadarsh. Continuing. Srila Jiva Goswami further explains in his Kramasandarbha commentary on the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, recounting the disappearance of Lord Rishabhdev. Okay, so this is Jiva Goswami in his Kramasandarbha. When Rishabhdev gave up his body, what he actually gave up was his connection with the material plane onto which his body had projected itself. Reconsigning the material creation back to his own source of expansion, Lord Vasudev, he gave up his self-identification as a person of this world. So Rishabhdev is Vishnu Tattva, but he's an expansion of Vasudev. So Vasudev is the source of the creation of this world. Lord Narayan, Vasudev. So Rishabhdev gave the material creation back to Vasudev. Gave it up. That's what it means when it's said he gave up his body. He's God, so the whole creation is his body. Upasana means devotional meditation. The Upanishads teach more or less impersonal upasanas on the absolute truth. And from upasana shastras such as the Pancharatras, Vaishnavas learn how to focus their loving meditation on the personality of Godhead by deity worship and chanting of mantras. From these scriptures they discover that the entirety of existence, both spiritual and material, including the multitude of finite living beings, comprises the body of God. Given the understanding that Lord Rishabhdev did not actually give up his transcendental body, the words sahatena need to be interpreted accordingly. They should not be taken literally to mean that the fire burned up the forest along with it, his body. Don't take it literally like that, because his body is spiritual. It doesn't get burned up. Another way to read this phrase is provided by the rules of Sanskrit grammar. Tena is the instrumental case of the pronoun tat, that. It basically means by that or with that, tena. Actually, you see, this, the text doesn't say sa, it says tena, right?
No, it says
sa tena, okay. More specifically, instrumental usages are specified by sutras. Oh, here's a different sutra. This is Harinamrakarna. Like Sahar Tire Apradani Tritiya. That's a different one. Is that a Karaka Sutra or a Upapada? Okay, that's the actual usage here. A secondary agent, when joined by the words that mean together with, is expressed in the instrumental case. Is that translation okay? You don't have it in front of you? A secondary agent, when joined by the words that mean, by words that mean together with, Sahartai, is expressed in the instrumental case. That's for the fourth, that's the Karaka Prakara. Tena Saha can be understood in this special sense. The fire burned down the forest, and Lord Rishabhdev assisted the fire in this burning. So he was Not that he was part of what got burned, he was part of what did the burning. He was an assistant agent, an assistant subject. Like, Krishna, together with Balaram, killed the demon. Like that. So Balaram, the fire, together with the fire, with the help of Vrishabhdev, burned the forest down. One is equivalence in term of action. I'm sorry. According to Srila Jiva's explanatory notes on this sutra in his own Harinam Amrita grammar, there are two varieties of saharta, the idea of together with. The meaning, the idea of together with. One is equivalence in terms of action, quality or substance, and the other is simple coexistence. Like Ram and Krishna entered the forest. That's just they weren't physically together. But the other is that there's actually an equivalence that both of them did an action, both of them share a quality, both of them share the same substance. Like Rama, together with Krishna, are the absolute supreme Lord. That would be a statement of equivalence of substance. But this other kind of saha-arta is simply the two of them were together. They were physically together. One is equivalence in terms of action. Oh, I'm sorry. As example of the three subcategories of the first kind, equivalence of action, of quality or substance, Ramena Saha, Kridati Krishna. Krishna plays and so does Rama. Or second example, Ramena Saha, Sundara. He is beautiful and so is Rama. And substance, Ramena Saha Goman. He has cows and so does Rama. He's a cowherd, so is Rama a cowherd. In each of these examples, Krishna is directly connected with the action and so on, while Rama's connection is an afterthought. An example of Saharta as simple coexistence is Bala Krishnena Saha Dadi Matnati Yashoda. Yashoda churns yogurt accompanied by baby Krishna. He's not helping her churn, but he's there. He happens to be there, that's all. So here, Tena Saha with him indicates that Rishabhdev was a secondary agent of the act of burning. So this is Kriya, sharing the same Kriya. The fire burned the forest, and Rishabhdev also was burning the forest, assisting the fire. Rishabhdev was the secondary agent of the act of burning, assisting the forest fire. Only the primary subject, the fire, is expressed in the subject case, Davanala. And Rishabhdev is expressed in the instrumental case, Tena. But Tena refers to him, not to his body, according to this interpretation. Okay, don't read it. We're being told here not to read it that the fire burned the forest along with his body. His body didn't burn. Okay, any questions?
What does it mean that he assisted the fire?
I don't know. Well, it looks like he burned his fire. He sat down and, his body caught on fire. That could be how he added fuel to the, to the fire by letting his body apparently become part of what gets burned up. Somehow he's assisting. I think this was an accidental fire. It wasn't started by automatic or intentional spontaneous combustion. He didn't sit down and intentionally catch himself on fire. I think he just happened to be there when the forest fire happened. Anyway, because he's the Supreme Lord. It's his arrangement that the forest fire happened, even though he can't see that. He, by his supreme will, caused it to happen. So that's his participation. Yeah, Pagi Matamon.
The forest fire is caused by his
You can say that. You can explain it like that. That he's just acting as a mystic yogi and by his mystic power. But, okay. But he doesn't even need to use any yogic power. He's God. Just by power of being God, he can arrange it. Like a yogi has to use all his strength to accomplish some mystic thing. But God just has to desire it, and his energies does it, do it for him. But you can look at it from that point of view, that you're looking at him as a yogi, and by his yogic power, he burned the fire, the forest down. Okay.
Because generally, mystic yogi, when they attend perfection, sometimes the fire will come up, maybe that way.
Yeah, but I think the way the account runs here is that the forest fire caught on fire, and he was in the he was there when it happened. It's not that it started with him.
Well, he was learning about the
response. Yeah, or maybe he was sitting in one place, but I don't think he started the fire from his own body. Yeah, while he was wandering, and a forest fire happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Although it's pretty wet up there. It's a very lot of rainfall in that area. It must have been one of the months when it was dry, but it's not dry there very much. It rains like 9 months out of the year. Yes. 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 Yeah. Something. Something or other. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Is there anything else? Okay, we'll stop there. We'll move on from the next paragraph tomorrow. Sorry, not tomorrow. Day after tomorrow? Tuesday? We have class? Okay. Okay, Om Glory Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.